listening to Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service. Full Service.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio is supported by Compass, the future of real estate in the Metro DC area and beyond. Discover more at compass.com.
Full Service Radio is proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit simplecast.com.
Hi, welcome to Lunch Agenda. I'm Kiko Bourne, and we're here at the Line Hotel in DC on Full Service Radio. Every Monday at noon, I spend lunch break with advocates, doctors, parents, and more to learn about their agenda for the food system. And I ask each guest for one action our listeners can take to change things for the better. You can see pictures of the show at Kiko Buff on Instagram. So last week, we heard from a nutrition scientist who explained the health benefit of eating more whole grains in their unsifted, untreated form. And we also talked with Heinz Tomet of Next Step Produce, which is a farm in Maryland. And Heinz drives about an hour to deliver his wheat, rye, oats, seeds, beans, fruits, and veggies every week to Salu Bakery and Mill in D.C. Today, I have some long-awaited guests in the studio with me. I'm joined by the owners and bakers of Salu, who are going to continue our breadjucation journey. They're going to share their secret to turning whole grains into tasty, chewy loaves of bread and airy, flaky croissants, which many have found near to impossible to do. But before we meet them, I have Kiko's food news for today. First headline. A seed company co-founded by star restaurateur Dan Barber of Blue Hill in New York aims to build a big audience for new vegetable varieties that are tastier and more nutritious using the marketing muscle of chefs. Rose 7 Seed Company's first seeds include the Badger Flame Beet, three varieties of squash, a small creamy potato, a bitter cucumber, and a floral-tasting habanero pepper. Rose 7's founders hope to grab the attention of home gardeners and small farmers, then see these new varieties pop up at farmers markets, high-end grocery stores, and eventually national chains. Headline 2. The USDA has reported that demand for butter, cream, and other commodities rich in butter fat has increased after consumer perceptions were swayed by studies indicating lower health risks from consuming dairy fat along with the detrimental effects of alternative trans fats. Consumers aren't just eating more butter, they're willing to pay more for it, which is a boon that's giving gains to makers of premium brands. So it's interesting. Today's food news headlines actually have to do with our guests in the sense that we're talking about seeds and butter, both very relevant to bread. Come back after the break and we'll introduce you to the team from Salu. Stay tuned.
Full Service Radio is supported by Compass. Discover Compass, America's first modern real estate company. By pairing the industry's top agents with technology, Compass delivers an incomparable client experience from the first-time buyer to the seasoned seller. Visit them today in D.C., Maryland, and Virginia, or navigate compass.com day or night.
Welcome back to Lunch Agenda. This is Kiko, and we're starting our second episode of the Breadjucation series. So let me back up quickly and explain how we got here. I've always loved bread. My mom used to say I could live on bread and cheese. And when I lived in San Francisco for many years, I worked on the same block as Tartine Bakery. So I really came to know how good a loaf of bread could be. After a couple years of living in D.C. after moving here, I was convinced we needed more good bread, and I even started thinking about opening a bakery of my own. So it was at that point, about 2 years ago, that I was fortunate enough to be introduced to Jonathan Bethany, a bread baker whose national reputation preceded him, and his wife Jessica, and learned that they were planning to open their first bakery in D.C. Hi, Jonathan and Jessica. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having us, Kiko.
I've been really looking forward to today. And thank you, I just want to say, for how hard you two work to bring so many of us joy and health through what you're offering at Salu. So I'll introduce you formally. Jonathan Bethany is the head baker and co-owner of Salu. After his professional training at the San Francisco Baking Institute, he was inspired by Bay Area baker friends like Dave Miller, Josie Baker, Chad Robertson, Craig Ponsford to bake with whole grains. Later, at the Washington State University's Bread Lab, Jonathan worked with Dr. Stephen Jones to bring together the science of traditional plant breeding with the technique from his training in baking. He's also collaborated with chefs such as Dan Barber, who we mentioned has just launched the Seed Company, and Mark Vetri of Vetri Pizza. Jessica Aziz is married to Jonathan and is co-owner of Salu. Jessica's background is in fashion, Waldorf education, and teaching yoga. And Jess brings a keen eye for design into the layout and execution at Salu, so you often find her greeting you when you walk in the front door. She also brings a knowledge of Ayurvedic medicine into the teas and treats Salu offers, and it's that I'm going to be asking her about in a few minutes. So I stayed in touch with Jonathan and Jessica as they moved to D.C. and built the mill and the oven and the cafe, and I was able to join their team a few months before they opened Salu's doors. It was during those months that I met Charbel, the super talented pastry chef that they met while working together at Blue Hill Stone Barns. Welcome, Charbel.
Hi, thank you. Thank you for the invitation.
Of course. It's a joy to have you three. So Charbel Abrache is the pastry chef of Salu Bakery. He's originally from Venezuela, where he worked as a culinary instructor before coming to the United States to stage at Blue Hill at Stone Barns. At Blue Hill, he was introduced to fresh milled bread and pastries and also met Jonathan and Jess. Charbel was inspired to develop whole grain pastries for Salu when they asked him to come aboard and move to D.C. I have really fond memories of meeting the four of us at Jonathan and Jessica's house before the bakery was ready, sitting on the floor on pillows, drinking tea that Jess had made, and tasting Charbel's creations as we were recipe testing and building out Salu's menu. So fast forward, Salu Bakery and Mill has been open for 3 months now in Shaw. Congratulations, lucky 3 months. How does it feel?
Feels great.
Can you believe it? Does it feel like it's been 3 years, or does it feel like you opened yesterday?
Salu kind of feels timeless.
Kind of, because it's been a dream for so long. It's been a vision for so long, right? Can you explain the name, actually? I know it's on the website, but tell our listeners how you came up with that kind of magical-sounding name.
Well, some years before I knew that I wanted to bake for a living and for a lifestyle, I was fond of taking solo journeys across the globe and found myself in a far away Senegalese village, enjoying some of the only time in my life where I didn't have to work and didn't really have to do anything. Just found myself in a spiritual oasis of quietude and just day-to-day tasks and just living and breathing. And you know, as I was leaving this village and absorbing these lessons, I saw a majestic bird, and I thought to myself, I need to come back here one day and give something back for all that I've received. And I hope to also take what I've received here and give to where I'm going and change the way I live my life and have a life of service. And that the name of that bird is Salu in the Mandinka language. I also recently learned that there's, you know, many ethnic groups in Senegal, and another group common in the region near Kaolack, where I was staying, are the Fulani people, and in Fulani, Selu means good health.
That's so crazy. Hashtag meant to be.
So,
and you have, you know, already begun to fulfill that mission. I was kind of awed by the fact that about 2 or 3 weeks or maybe a month before you opened doors at Selu, you went back to Senegal. You and Jess went there and you, you know, put some time into a millet project there and have brought a lot of that learning to the guests that walk through the doors at Selu about millet. And I have a feeling that you'll be back many more times. So fast forward, the door has been open for about 3 months. Jonathan has since been nicknamed the Steve Jobs of bread, which I was actually surprised you were okay with, it seemed like, but you're making a face now. So I don't know how that feels. It's a big title. Charbel has developed, a following, a fangirl and boy following for his croissants, his whole wheat croissants. But you could say the odds were stacked against you two, with your goal of baking with whole grains completely unsifted and untreated. You know, and by that I mean that I've read things such as, there was a paper that I read from McGill University, and it said, for centuries, bakers have known that good quality baked goods, quote unquote, could not be made with freshly made flour because the dough would lack strength and resilience to trap the gas. Jonathan, how do you make whole grain bread tastes so good and not be a brick? What's your secret?
Well, I'm glad that you feel that way about the whole grain bread. it's funny. It's not something I actually think about. It's something that I just do, almost as, sounds a little metaphysical, but it just almost, it's like I'm listening to what the grain wants, really trying to connect with it, trying to know it, not giving up on it when things go down the road of what most people would call failure. We just keep going, and that's what I encourage Charbel to do, and our new apprentice Matthew, what's really led to it is being trapped in some way. Love, life, loss are the teachers, and in loss and not having something, that's what's driven me to refine the whole grain baking technique. When I moved to Washington to work with Steve Jones, he didn't allow me to use white flour.
And this is Washington State, just to be clear for everyone.
Yeah.
Right.
He didn't allow me to use white flour. Mm-hmm. So anything I wanted to do with bread, you know, that could have been achieved by a handful of walnuts and cranberries, or, you know, a little sugar or butter or what have you, I needed to get that out of the kernel. So we started popping and malting, and if I did mill, I could separate it out and recombine it in different ways. And, it fostered a lot of creativity being restricted in that way. So, it's an ongoing process developing whole grain recipes. But the kind of method to that is by embracing the, as you say, what's stacked against us, and persevering, and not just opting for the easy way out or the way that has been done before, but continually taking the ego smashing, as we call it. Josie Baker and I have this thing, we send each other pictures every other day or so of a failure and call it ego smasher of the day, because this trade will keep you humble.
This is Josie, who has the mill, which is on Divisadero Street in San Francisco, who I was lucky enough to befriend before moving to D.C. And you bakers really keep each other up. You know, you maybe you two ego smash, but it's amazing the tight-knit community of bakers across the country. And I know that you also have that community in France and other places in the world, in Senegal, for example. And Heinz, you know, Heinz even said that where you shine is making nutrient dense ingredients into good bread, and he doesn't dole out compliments easily. So I think that there, I've seen guests come in who grew up, you know, or in the 70s in their hippie days, used to eat spelt bread and just kind of were okay with it being very dense and heavy and kind of brick-like, and then encounter, Jonathan, your spelt bread, and it just, it's an, a whole new thing. And so I do encourage any listeners to come in and try a type of grain they haven't had in bread before at Seilu. So why are you sourcing from Heinz, Jonathan, and Charbel? You know, Charbel, we'll get to you and pastry program in a moment, but okay. You two source from Heinz and you source from Omar Beiler and Daniel Shirk and others. You know, those two are in Pennsylvania, and we have the pictures of these hardworking growers on the wall at Seilu. Why do you source from them when you could be working with Central Milling or King Arthur or other big companies where you could just order online and get it shipped from other parts of the country? Why take the time and money and energy to source locally?
Well, that's a difficult question to answer without really investigating the real purpose and intention behind Seilu.
Please do that.
You know, I guess we've talked about integrity before, and not to say that a large company is not going to have integrity, but I think one of our goals is to put our money into supporting what is going to support the land for generations to come, what is going to support organic agriculture, is going to support, you know, farmers who are willing to take the pounding of an unpredictable climate going through all the changes we're going through, and the economic pounding of not really being able to be competitive with the big boys due to smaller yields and not going hyper-efficient with the industrial way of the larger companies, but having the intention of really stewarding the land and really making sure that what they are feeding people is as nutrient dense and supercharged with every bit of ability they have to make it good. These are the farmers that we use. These are they are salt of the earth, farmers who really care. And they are close to us. So, you know, the money that we give to them, it goes right into their pocket. And I try to minimize the money that is spent on burning fossil fuels and packaging and repackaging. And, you know, since we have our own stone mill, we cut one of those links out. You know, the two companies you mentioned, usually, although you can get berries from them, they are mills as well. At least King Arthur, I think, uses a mill, though I don't think that they are a mill. But anyway, it's cutting out middle people. Mm-hmm. You know, why truck something across halfway across the United States when, you know, there are farmers here? The other thing is communication. It's direct communication. With Heinz and Omar, we're on the phone every week talking about the anomalies, the changes, the weather, the plan for next year, what works, what doesn't work, what's been difficult. You know, and we're developing a personal relationship, a friendship. And that's very important to Seilu. That's why we chose to have a retail location, is to develop community and relationship.
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know. You and Dan Barber are very close from, you know, working together and on the bread program at Blue Hill. And so I'm sure you know much more about his new seed company than I do. But I've read one phrase that he uses, which is participatory plant breeding. And it's this idea of breeders, farmers, and chefs, and, you know, you're a chef baker, collaborating to build new supply chains around around seeds and crops. So what you're describing sounds to me like that. It's really, you know, you in weekly communication with the growers, planning together and taking risks together. Mm-hmm. Is this what you mean when you talk about Saleu's whole farm philosophy? How would you define Saleu's whole farm philosophy?
Well, I really credit that to Dan. I actually think that's a saying from him. Mm. And basically, our approach was to go, I'll take Heinz for an example. There were two moments that really affected me and the course of Saleu, two major interactions with Heinz that I can share quickly. The first was I made the mistake of inquiring about his price and to another farmer and wondering why it was so much higher than, you know, what I had been used to buying from larger companies in the past. And when Heinz found out about that, he really ripped me out, you know. And to be ripped out by a salt of the earth farmer, to see the wrinkles in his forehead and the sweat, you know, around his neck and the small cottage, you know, we were sitting on his porch, and to see his wife and his children and the way he lives, and to have him telling me, why are you pinching me? You know, I see how hard he works, and I think it is the farmers who get pinched the most, the small farmers in the whole system, in the whole grand scheme. So that was a wake-up call to say, okay, where I want to put my money is I want it to go to the farmers. And not only that, I want to see how, you know, how I can adjust my business in a way that really supports him as far as, you know, broadening the scope of the products that go into the style of agriculture that he's employing. And that's what led us to the horse bread. That was the second big moment, was walking the fields and being like, Heinz, why don't you just grow all grains? Why don't you just grow all wheat? You know, I could probably buy, you know, 40 acres worth of wheat. And, you know, he just kind of gazed across the field and like, this kid really, where do I begin? He really, let's go back to elementary here. But he explained to me that, you know, diversity is so important, as he was referring to in your previous episode.
Yeah.
He needs to grow a wide range of crops to break up disease cycles, to balance out the nutrients in the soil, and also for compost matter, you know, growing the rye with the big, super tall rye with the huge straw is important for mulch and compost. And it's not just the wheat berries or the kernels that are being used. Mm. It's a holistic system.
Right.
You know, the summer crops of buckwheat, millet, and sorghum, you know, fit in as a rotation. Again, it's a lot of biomass that gets turned into the soil. And if I buy his buckwheat as well as his wheat, you know, the buckwheat's planted in the summer and the wheat's seeded in the winter, he gets two crops for one growing season.
Right.
So the horse bread is using his legumes and using the millet and the sorghum, some of the summer crops, you know. I can't do that in the proportions needed to really fully support him there. But if I could tell that story and inspire others to consider the whole farm and the whole system, we'll have achieved something.
So in that sense, the whole farm is kind of like we hear about cooking with the whole pig or the whole cow, the whole animal. It's you're using all of the parts that the producer needs to farm in a sustainable way, or as many of them as you can. So the last question I want to ask you about your bread is about your sourdough Levain, and just what you've taught me in terms of how it releases nutrition because of the way that the sourdough works on the grain and takes care of phytates, or anything you'd like to share about your sourdough fermentation process.
Well, as human beings with a short digestive tract, as opposed to ruminants with quite an extensive digestive capability with multiple stomachs, when we're breaking down grains, from my understanding, it's really not enough if you just chomp on. I mean, first of all, to get with your teeth, if you've ever taken a mouthful of wheat or rye berries,
wouldn't go very well.
Yeah, it doesn't really work. So yes, we're grinding or milling and making porridges or making cereals. That's how we can get it into our body.
Right.
But once it's in there, it does need to be broken down to really get the most out of it. And there is the phosphorus salt phytate that does bind the minerals that David was talking about, the zinc and magnesium and calcium. And to break that, you need an enzyme. By the way, not a scientist. I worked around scientists.
Right. You always make that disclaimer.
Please forgive me for the mistakes I make in this. But it has been made clear to me that the enzymes in our sourdough starter are able to break down the phytate and make the minerals available.
Right.
So what we're doing with fermentation is kind of like using those multiple stomachs over the course of this is like mama bird also breaking down the food to give to her children,
right?
So
the seagull. Yep.
So it's we try to extend the fermentation out as long as possible in order to get the most nutritive value out of it without compromising the structure and flavor of the bread. As you know, I believe deliciousness is a component of health as well, and enjoyment. And that's part of getting it into your body too, right? It has to taste good.
right, to make a habit of it.
Yeah, so we try to find that balance. But I try to put the Levain in everything that I make, and I'm encouraging Charbel to slip as much as he can in as well.
Charbel, are there one or two items in the pastry case that have a sourdough Levain in them that you would point our listeners to?
Croissant definitely has. We're trying with our scones that are now one of the most popular items.
Yeah, they are. That savory scone with spinach and cheddar from Trickling Springs is so good.
Yeah. And now I'm starting to try with regular cakes and muffins, and it's in development. I will not say that it's for sure a product right now, but we're trying to.
Right. And so will you tell us, Charbel, the story of when Jonathan came back from Senegal most recently and in this past fall and told you to not bake with wheat anymore and try baking with millet and sorghum and these other grains that he was so jazzed about?
Yeah. So at the beginning when we met and Jonathan invited me to jump into the Seilu project itself, Jonathan inquired me to use whole grain. From where I am originally, we are not familiar with the use of whole grain. As a matter of fact, a couple of days ago, I was saying to Jonathan that I was practically totally against using whole grain because the products that we have available in my country that uses whole grain are terrible.
Mm.
So taste wise,
you were not convinced.
Yeah, I wasn't convinced. So one of the good things that happened to me when I visited Blue Hill at Stone Barns in New York was definitely getting to know that whole grain can be a good thing. Besides being nutritious and healthy and good for you, it can be tasty. So as a chef that usually is driven by the taste or how it looks or how it reacts, that component of being not good taste-wise is very important to us. So when I took one of the breads that Jonathan was making in at Blue Hill, I think it was the first day we were seeing at the backyard where they do the grills. It was a moment of, wow, this is actually good. I never thought that actually this could be that good, even better than just regular white flour. So then I started to taste croissants that they were developing over there with whole grain. It was amazing. Brioche was really good. Some of the cookies that they had were offering have some whole grain components into it. It was amazing. So that completely inspired me. So he gave me the first challenge when we started to work together and say, you got to use whole grain. Okay, I'll say, yeah, I'll give it a try. I don't have any experience on it, but I give it a try. I think that I can do it. And when we started to develop the menu, everything was a disaster because I didn't have the experience. Jonathan can share a couple of things.
Well, thank goodness for a delayed opening of a business, right? You were in the luxury of time.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that Jonathan asked me to do was, okay, do the best thing that you are that you can do with pastry wise. So I decided to do a choux, an éclair. I said, I'm a master of it. I'm pretty sure I can do it. And I used whole grain and it wasn't good. So part of what Jonathan just said about this is a process where failure needs to be understood in other way than just being a failure. That's how we approach now the pastry program. So I was struggling with whole grain, and then Jonathan came back from Senegal and say, okay, no more grain, no more wheat. You got to use millet. You got to use sorghum. You got to use buckwheat. And I was like, I just started to understand whole wheat. Now I got to move into millet. So lucky me, the millet is amazing. The first couple of tests that we did, the millet chocolate chip was a winner. I love that. Now we're doing millet cannelés, which is amazing. I will not buy a regular cannelé anymore because I know that the flavor of the millet, for example, is so good that the other one is just boring, I'll say. Now, there is nothing going on over there besides just the rum or the amount of sugar that they add, but the millet is so amazing. Then we moved into sorghum. We're using sorghum for brownies. Now we're doing oat cookie with sorghum. We're developed the sorghum syrup sorghum cookie that is like a take on a regular molasses cookie. Mm-hmm. So it's a cookie that it's 100% sorghum and it's sweetened by 100% sorghum syrup. So it's very interesting now to start playing with all these components.
And one thing that you haven't, I think, mentioned outright is that you don't use any white sugar in your baking.
No.
You're using these interesting sweeteners like sorghum syrup and hickory syrup, which has a beautiful smoky flavor to it.
Yeah, it's amazing. One of the things that distinguish the pastry program at St. Louis is that we don't use any refined sugars. We don't add any refined sugars to our pastry. So we use dehydrated cane juice. We use sorghum syrup. We use maple syrup. We use maple sugar. Hickory syrup is one of the new addition to the roast to the list.
And
of
that's
the sweetener.
Just from Virginia, right?
Yeah, that's it.
It's a great local sweetener. Mm-hmm. So quickly, give us a preview of a couple of the next items that you might be introducing in spring.
Okay, we're working now with buckwheat. We're using a lot of buckwheat. We might introduce muffins or scones with buckwheat. Granola.
How would you describe the flavor of buckwheat?
I'll say that if it's interesting because when we toast it in millet, it's very similar to peanut butter. So it has that earthiness and that complex flavor that I'm starting to like. for cakes is really good. I think with the citrus or the fresh fruits that we will start to see in this coming season will be an amazing add to the list of the menu that we have in Sailu. What else we are doing?
Buckwheat granola you mentioned.
Yeah, that's in development. We're doing a buckwheat, sorghum, and oat granola. Wow. That we use with hickory syrup. It's really good as well. It's in development, but it's closer than before, I'll say.
Sounds amazing. So I'm going to pivot over to Jessica, who I want to make sure we talk to, because Jessica, as I said, is a face that you see when you walk into Sailu. And it became clear to me when I started hanging out with Jonathan and Jessica that health was central to their lives. And Jess really makes that a priority through the herbs she offers in the cafe. So, Jess, can you tell us a bit about where you learned about the benefit of herbs?
Sure. Well, I attended Naropa University, and there I took an herbal medicine class with Brigitte Mars, and she was such an inspirational figure for me, and she opened my eyes to the beauty of herbs and their healing potential in our lives, and that was a big turning point in my life.
And why or how do you offer those herbs at Sailu? What are some of the ways people can come in and be exposed to the herbs that you've brought into the space?
Well, we offer a variety of different teas, both herbal, and then we also have some caffeinated teas. One tea that is served regularly is the masala chai tea, which was inspired by Jonathan and I's journeys throughout India. And it's has a lot of healing herbs like cinnamon, ginger, clove, nutmeg, allspice, cardamom, and it's cooked in together with the grass-fed whole milk to really extract the volatile oils of the herbs so that you really can absorb that even more into your body. Mm. So there's the chai, and then there's nettle tea, there's our winter blend tea, which is full of amazing adaptogens like ashwagandha root, astragalus root, yarrow, sage, and rosemary. So I'm trying to open people's eyes up to these other herbs that are not as commonly used and get them into their bodies.
And you just mentioned the way that milk can make the herbs in the chai more available. Mm-hmm. Explain to me how you think about pairing herbs with food and the food that's offered at Sailu.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a lot of different herbs that can increase your agni, your digestive fire, digestive juices, such as ginger. And by stoking the digestion and digestive tract, you can be able to absorb the nutrients of the whole grains that you're getting and just digest it even more easily. So that pairing of strong herbs like ginger with carbohydrates and fats is beneficial for the body.
Yeah. That's really helpful. And I'm still learning about adaptogens, and you've taught me a lot about, you know, what nettle does. And I just think that over time, I know you're going to be bringing in new menu items that incorporate herbs and plants that a lot of us who live around DC don't know as much about. So thank you for teaching us about that. So we have time for one more thing, which is the very important action item from each of you. What would you like listeners of Lunch Agenda to do, maybe related to what you're doing at Sailu, or maybe just something that you incorporate into your personal life that's really, made you feel good about your impact on the food system? Anything that you'd want to offer? Who's first?
I'll say visiting a farmer's market and getting to know your farmer is an easy action. And it's something that it's very easy to do.
Yeah.
That will definitely connect you with the with your local system.
Which farmer's market do you go to? Because guests don't get to see you as much. You're always back in your kitchen at Salu. So if they want to see Charville's face, where might they find him?
DuPont Circle Farmer's Market.
The DuPont Market, yeah, on Sunday mornings.
H Street Farmer's Market. Before Salu opened, I was over there every Saturday morning. Okay. But I'll say DuPont's. It's a good one to start.
Yes, it's not too shabby.
No, not too
quite,
shabby.
Quite a few little delicious things there. Yeah. It's amazing. Jonathan or Jess, any action item to offer today?
I'd say in incorporating more herbs into your diet, whether it's something more simple like cinnamon or cardamom, but just, you know, incorporating it more into your everyday foods or just having an herbal tea on a regular basis. My action item.
Yeah, we used to talk about at the Capital Area Food Bank even how herbs can take the place of salt, for example, just adding so much flavor in a more healthful way. That leaves Jonathan.
I recommend taking 5 to 10 minutes to sit and reflect on your life meaning and purpose, and how that is manifest through each of your actions, whether how we speak or how we walk or how we earn our living, and certainly how we spend our living. And to think about how that all fits in and how we're all connected. And just to have that consciousness and bring that into every moment. And yeah,
and into every day.
Yeah, yeah. I was just reading Simran Sethi's latest book, and she said something that meant a lot to me. It said, "We how we live our days is how we live our life."
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's beautifully said. So, thank you so much, Salu team. Today is one of your precious days off, and it's been fun having you in the studio here. Salu does have new drinks and loaves and new pastries from Chef Charbel coming this spring, so stay tuned with them at Salu Bakery on Instagram and Twitter. And for pictures of today's interview, you can check out my Instagram, KikoBuff. Next Monday, I'll round out our Breducation series by inviting two experts on the Mid-Atlantic regional grain economy to the studio, the historian of Pierce Mill in Rock Creek Park and a grain scientist from the University of Maryland. See you then.